Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome. Come on in. Grab a seat. Stay standing, whatever's comfortable. Thanks for joining me this morning. I'm Jesse. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University. Before we start, I want to acknowledge that we here at CJSF, this program and all of our programs are produced and broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkamilam and Squamish speaking people who have been here gathering to share stories and music and culture and just be together since time immemorial, since a time before any of us can remember. And I'm very grateful to be able to be in this space and do my own version of that in these lands that were never formally given away or conquered. Today on the program, we've got a bunch of stuff. We've got a few pre-recorded segments. We've got some music, got a little bit of talk, but I want to kick things off. Well, I always kick things off with a little bit of local music, and why don't we do that, and then we'll get into what I think is the most important part of the show. This is local music. It's not that new, but it is a brand new addition to the CJSF playlist. It's by Self Care. I've played them on this program many times before. Why not once more? This is Don't Try.
Thank you.
Try by Self-Care. Their new record, Doggy, is out now on streaming and out for purchase on Bandcamp. I'm Jesse. This is Speak Up. This is our first show post-Fun Drive, and I want to take a little time to thank you for helping us make Fun Drive as successful as it was. We've so far raised over $8,000, and donations have continued to come in by mail, and people are still heading to cjsffundrive.ca to make donations online. You can do that if you'd like. We do appreciate it, and it helps us do what we do here at CJSF even more and even better. But if you have already donated, thank you. Thank you so much. I know Cheryl Manti donated $140 to this program, which is great. And helped us reach this show's goal almost single-handedly. And it just really means a lot for you out there to have made your support of what we do here at CJSF, what I do here at CJSF, tangible and real. So once again, thank you. And you won't hear us asking you to donate again until this time next year, 2026. So thank you. And again, there is still time to get in donations if you want one of the limited edition prints of our Fun Drive art by artist Charlotte Cho. You can still get that if you make a donation of $90.10 or more at cjsffundrive.ca. So, again, thank you. It really means a lot, particularly for me. This is my first Fun Drive as programming coordinator at the station, and I also want to thank everyone at the station who really went all out. We had people designing graphics. We had people producing social media content. We had people doing really excellent episodes of their shows and really, really pushing to help convince you to donate. And so thank you to everyone who participated in Fun Drive 2025. Okay, we're going to move on to our first bit of talk content for the day, unless you count that thank you speech I just made. We're going to hear from relatively new volunteer Florentina, who has this piece about protests.
Hello, hello. My name is Florentina, and I'm very excited today to be joined by Angeline and a friend of hers, where we'll be looking back to the Indonesian protests that had happened back in August this year. Angeline and her friend, too, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi, my name is Angeline. I am an art major from ITB, Institute Teknologi Bandung in Indonesia. And I should probably give some background as to how it happened in the first place, right?
Absolutely.
So there has been a lot of rising tensions between the citizens of Indonesia and the House of Parliament members, the DPR members, and a lot of corruption taking place, in a sense, like a lot of tax hikes, and everything reached to a boiling point when a video surfaced, not even a video, it was an official video of the House of Parliament members dancing after they got a rise in their what was it? It was housing prices, not housing.
Their allowance, I believe.
Yes, their allowance.
Like to help cover rent or mortgage, I'm assuming.
Exactly. But it was really tone deaf for the Indonesian citizens, especially for the DPR members that were already receiving, in my opinion, a salary that was way too high for what they were working on. That was on the 25th of August. And I remember thankfully, I wasn't alone. I was at a friend's apartment just hanging out prior to that. And when the news dropped, everybody was like, oh God, this is totally not going to go to something horrible. This is totally not going to have any ramifications, right? And then the peak of the demonstrations was literally just 3 days later on the 28th. A delivery driver, Afan Kurniawan, he passed away because a police vehicle, an armored tank, literally ran over him during a protest, and he wasn't even a part of that protest. He was doing his job, and the clip went viral, and it really enraged a lot of citizens because I think he represented a lot of parts and homes of a lot of Indonesian citizens, in a sense, like he was just there for work and he wasn't even there for a protest. He was called there because it was a necessity to provide for his family. And even then, he still got murdered. As to where I was, again, like I said before, I was thankfully already at a friend's apartment and I wasn't alone. So I didn't have to go anywhere far if I wanted to get like groceries or if I want to get food, if I want to get water. So a lot of my basic necessities were already covered by the time the demonstrations were happening. So thankfully I didn't have to go out that much, but it was incredibly scary to look online and everywhere you see, it's just another update, another person getting hurt, another person getting murdered by the police or some people going missing. It's terrifying.
It's really hard out there, but I'm actually really interested in what you were saying about having to rely on like the internet basically to keep up with the news.
So for me personally, I wasn't a part of the demonstrations. I couldn't go down there and see for myself and like protest myself because in the very beginning, even from the early days of the protest, there was already a lot of censorship happening. I forgot when exactly, but there
Interesting.
was big media outlets were not allowed to comment on, what was happening. And like the demonstrations and stuff like that. It wasn't being reported on mainstream media. That's why we had to rely on social media and word of mouth. And I did hear from some friends overseas that that was also how they were getting news. And even then, it was very limited because, again, the censorship was crazy. And it was already a few days into the protest. And even stuff on TikTok was already being censored and taken down. And
Interesting.
a lot of higher ups were muddying the waters by paying people off to give propaganda that was positive towards the DPR members. A lot of instigators that weren't actually a part of the protest, but they were paid off to be in that protest, which honestly, I can't really blame them for. It's a hard life. They have to be paid for something, right? I think it's just a reflection as to how this country has already gone to this point that we have to turn on our fellow citizens just to feed our families, but yeah, the censorship was crazy, and I mostly got my information from word of mouth from my friends, and a lot of people in my campus were a part of the demonstrations. They did go down to the streets and they did protest about their rights and fair unfair treatment that the DPR members are giving. And there was a photo of a random guy, and everyone was saying that he was an instigator, and he was like a spy for the government. And there were screenshots of him trying to talk to people, trying to get information out of people. And the fact that it could happen, then this was like before everything got super, super bad. Like I think there was a day after Afan Kurniawan's passing, and that was when it really hit me because like, oh, they're really targeting students and college students specifically to get information, and they're definitely going to be in danger if they were not careful. So I guess social media, I'm very thankful for social media because this isn't the first demonstration that Indonesia has done, obviously. 1989, there was a lot of riots then as well, and we didn't have the luxury of social media, so information was definitely a lot more blurred. I can't imagine how it was back then, where literally the only form of communication of was straight up word from mouth from someone that you trusted, and even then they could have been paid off, so you have no idea really. The information was so unclear in a sense, like later in the protest there was a lot of posters that came out, and this isn't like official posters. This is like, oh, if you want to join our protest, or if you want to join our us speak our minds, come to this place at this time. And there was a lot of tells that it was actually, propaganda and something from instigators that is not official, that would be dangerous if you were to go to that meeting, which was really small tells. Like I feel like if you were older or if you didn't have any social media, you would be convinced that these posters were from fellow citizens who did want to speak up. And it was just that the designs were really bad. And there was a lot of like random wording. It looked like your uncle from the neighborhood making a really bad poster for an event that celebrated his birthday party or something. It was just that was the main tell of whether or not you should go to these meetings. Because and also to add on to the sorry, I'm not like doing this in order of the timeline because I it's that it's already, it's only been a month, but it's already so much happened in such a short amount of time. I think it was just 2 weeks, and my brain's already jumbled as to when something happened or not. And another one was, strangely, this was after the news stations were already, given a ban on documenting the demonstrations. But the moment a fire broke out, it was a public transportation stop. I know that. If I'm not mistaken, it was a bus stop. It was a public bus stop. And that bus stop was burned down. And even though the big media was not allowed to document on station things, they were somehow allowed to showcase the fires and what that occurred. Immediately, everybody on social media was like, "We didn't do that. There's no way we did that because that doesn't make any sense." And for one, it didn't make sense because that's public transportation. That's something that belongs to the citizens. That would be something that is completely beneficial to us, and it would make absolutely no sense if we were to burn that down for the sake of a demonstration. And there have been eyewitness reports that late in the night, when the demonstrations were, that for when the demonst when the protest for that day was already cooling down, there were reports of some people wearing big jackets or like basically covering their identities and hiding their identities, bringing in a ladder from God knows where and climbing onto that bus station to pour gasoline. And it was like, huh? That's not something a normal demonstrator would do. So clearly, it can't be us. That has to be an instigator, right? But again, a lot of people are still on the fence about that. I remember going on social media and first looking at the news, like, huh, that makes no sense. And then I open my Instagram story to look at all my friends, and like maybe 50% of them were already talking about, like, I agree with the protest, but this is not the way, as if this was something that the demonstrators would do. And I was like, wait, so the propaganda might be working, actually. So yeah, that was just a crazy time. What?
Absolutely. Yeah, I even had like a lot of people I knew from here, from a lot of other places too, reposting that shit and going like, "Yeah, it's horrible what the demonstrators are doing." It's like, "No, you're not. It's you gotta look a little
Oh
closer."
my God.
I
Yeah,
know. They're really targeting like the media illiterate. It's like it's
exactly.
really horrible out there. It's really interesting though, you brought up the 1998 protests. It's kind of like a sign that history is almost repeating itself. Censorship continues. Do you think censorship is kind of like going to continue, I guess? Like it's used as a weapon by governments in Indonesia, maybe even like in other places too.
I definitely think that if somebody in power has a chance or some way to keep themselves in power, they will keep it. And one of those things, specifically in Indonesia, would be a crazy case of censorship, and misdirection. The cocktail of misdirection and censorship is absolutely horrible because, especially in the 1998 protest, that was in the end, it ended up being targeted towards Chinese Indonesians, and it ended up turning into a race war. And during the August protest, that almost happened again. In a sense, I saw a lot of talk on social media that, oh, this is a Chindo's fault. And I point to myself like, huh? How is this my fault? What did I do? And it was like a lot. It was really shocking. And then they were trying to redirect the anger from the people in charge to fellow citizens. So we would just keep fighting each other rather than fighting the people who were actually in power.
Yep.
And it's just another repetition of what was happening.
The timing of the demonstrations was really interesting to me because at the time, I remember before even like hearing about the demonstrations happening or plans of having a demonstrations, there were like a lot of social media posts regarding the regarding corruption in the Philippines, for example, around the same time as the August protests in Indonesia. There was also like some demonstrations happening in Nepal, in I believe not Bangladesh. Bangladesh happened a few months before, I believe. But yeah, how do you think the protests are influenced by other protests like around the world? And how do you think it's affected these other protests that kind of came afterwards?
I definitely have no doubt that once one country starts to quote unquote wake up, another country would definitely start to see. I think sometimes it's just the match that lights the flame, in a sense. Not to put Indonesia in such high regard. I don't know, my homeland, God bless. But it's like maybe we did inspire some other countries, some people in other countries to want to stand up to corrupt individuals in their government. And I think that that's a great thing. Honestly, God, we need more of it. Please don't censor media.
I really liked your segment and commenting on how ugly the posters for the fake protests were. There's like a really big, especially in like X, there, there's a lot of activism coming from artists like yourself, within the protests. Maybe you could, like, what's your comment on that?
I personally believe that art has always been political. It has always been a
Absolutely.
political tool to push back against corrupt governments. It has always been a tool to communicate with other human beings, to share your thoughts and ideals. Same thing with demonstrations now. It's a lot easier to join together under one roof and under one name, metaphorically, if there's a clear design standpoint and a clear vision as to what you're standing behind, which is why there were three colors associated with the demonstrations, which are hero green, brave pink, and there was a dark blue that forgive me, I forgot the name
I
of in
believe.
full. But those have their own symbolisms as to why those were chosen as the colors of rebellion. And the first one was blue, which was a few months ago. There was another
Resistance blue. Sorry, just
resistance,
looked it
yeah,
up. Resistance
resistance blue,
blue.
thank you. So with Resistance Blue, it was a few months ago, and there was, God, I already forgot, but there was another protest regarding another thing, regarding some more corruption. And there was it actually originated from a Indonesian analog horror show, and it was, okay, the translation would be darurat penting, like important announcement. And it was used as a sign to quote unquote wake up and to focus on the corrupt government. And that was the start of Resistance Blue. And Resistance Blue was a few months before Brave Pink and Hero Green. So what was the color behind Hero Green would be because of the death of Afan Kurniawan. And he was a Gojek driver, which the Indonesian translation would be like a food pickup driver. And the clothes that he were wearing were green because that is the color of the brand. Of Gojek, of Grab is a very popular color here for delivery drivers. And as a sign of solidarity, the next day after when Afan was taken to his funeral, a lot, and I mean a lot, I mean a whole road was covered with green suits, with green helmets. It was a lot of solidarity between fellow drivers that, oh, this was one of my brothers, I should also take to the road to protest, this death. And it was a sign of peaceful protest. And you just see a sea of green. And it was honestly a very beautiful thing to see. And so That was the behind the Hero Green. And Brave Pink was because of a clip that went viral of a small little Indonesian auntie who's very short with a really bright pink hijab, just whacking the police with a large stick.
Queen.
And
Okay.
everybody was like, damn, that's low-key crazy. Let's make her a face. And there have ever since then there have been rumors and talks about how she could have been an instigator. And I feel like that has definitely shifted away the talk of how, oh, this was a brave person who stood up against the government to actually, oh, this person was an instigator who was being paid off by the government to cause more mayhem in the protest. And no matter what the real answer is, I feel like what matters most is the impression that she gave to the hearts of the Indonesian people, which is to continue fighting. And although the, God, what's that word? The backstory, or like
Yeah.
the intentions do matter behind her acts. I feel like the fact that she was still able to inspire a lot of people and, you know, become a face of a revolution that maybe she was paid to go against. I still feel like that's a good thing. It's a net positive in a sense, like, you know, it still gave hope to Indonesian people.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
yeah, those were the three colors, and you were seeing them everywhere. And honestly, design is a very important thing, because at that point, the moment you see green, pink, or blue in specifically those shades, you will immediately remember the protest. Because at that point, as an Indonesian, it is hardwired into your brain that, oh, these colors mean that this protest is still happening. So it was just like a good reminder, rather than people directly telling you the protests are still happening. You know, maybe it's just like a subconscious thing, but that's why design is so important, especially in the era of, you know, AI God. Okay.
Okay. I guess on an ending note, where do you think we're going now? Do you think the country has gotten better since, or there's, a better sense of accountability at the very least?
All right. So, in my opinion about how the country is going right now, I still think there's a lot of things that could be improved. Especially because before the protest ended, there were asks from the citizens about what they wanted the parliament members to do. And it was very specific. It was like bullet points, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, blah, 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 blah.
Literally just a
And
to-do list.
literally, it was just a to-do list. It was the most simple to-do list. And it was, when the parliament announced, you know, what they were going to do about the to-do list, they did listen, but like listen with this on the smallest volume. In a sense, like, they fulfilled, I think it was three asking points. They did three out of like 17, and it was not a lot. And one of those asking points were to, you know, the wage of the a parliament member, it's not very parallel to how much they are working. Therefore, they should not be earning that much money. And an ask was to, you know, lower that amount of money. But okay, they did take away the housing allowance. Thank God. Obviously, if you,
Bare
yeah,
minimum.
if, the, because they do not need that much money. But if you were to look at before the protest and after the protest, the members still got an increase. You don't notice that because at least the overall number has gone down. But if you were to like take a look at the graphs, they still got more money than what they were doing before. So with that, I have no doubt that Indonesians and literally everybody from corrupt governments will still have to put up a strong fight against people in high powers to keep them accountable to not continue doing stuff like this. And I have no doubt that in the near future there will be another protest regarding this, because not much has changed in a sense. To keep it very bleak, people in power are still in power. They're still very rich. And there are still hundreds and even thousands, tens of thousands of Indonesians still suffering and going hungry, starving for food on the streets. I think it's also important that around this time, there are three sides that you can, there are two sides that you can take. And you can either be on the side of the oppressors or the oppressed. And there is no such thing as a neutral side, because staying neutral, you are automatically a part of on the side of the oppressors, because you're not trying to make any active change to, change the system that you're in. You're just happy living in the system that you are in now. It Even if you were middle class, you are closer to the oppressed rather than the oppressors. Would you like to talk to my friend? Because she,
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
yeah. What's your experience, Diva? She can give maybe better experience as someone who is treated in a quote unquote, I put quotes very heavily, quote unquote, better position,
Okay.
because she does have family in some sort of government, not DPR, but like some sort of. So for me, I mean, those news back then were definitely terrifying, and it definitely was terrifying, and everything happening back then feels overwhelming to everyone. Everyone, obviously. Like Angie mentioned earlier, that there was a time where it felt unsafe just to go outside, right? Not even because of the demonstration themselves, but because the police were hitting anyone and anything inside, like people, cars, like you name it. It was pure chaos. And at that time, I had to go home and catch a shuttle, right? My dad works for the government, right? And I'm not here to defend him or say like he's one of the good ones. No, But it's been shocking to see how he's been silenced or threatened for speaking out. Like, he criticized the decision, like the recent allowance raise for the higher officials, saying like, why raise it when so many aren't doing their jobs, right? And even for just saying that could risk his position. So like when I went to Jakarta during those chaotic days, it was heartbreaking to see damage everywhere. And my dad told me something that really stuck. Like he said, some of the scenes are almost si seem staged. Like Angie mentioned it earlier, like it seems staged, especially when the DPR houses was raided. It was strange how the police were everywhere at first, right? They were hitting people, they were arresting people, they were everything, they were everywhere. But when this happened, like suddenly they were nowhere to be found. Like from my perspective, it's a complicated feeling because of my dad's position. I cannot join the demonstration directly, and that makes me feel conflicted. Like, don't get me wrong, I recognize my privilege and I'm grateful for it, but it also limits how openly I can participate. Like, yeah, still, I've been doing what I can, speaking out online, reposting information, donating, and implying voices. And it's been really moving to see so many others doing the same. But my God, I feel like if I go out there and then somehow I got kidnapped or I got arrested, like they're gonna like, who's your dad? And I was gonna, and my dad will like lose his position, which would be saddening, not just for my family, but like now he cannot, like if
Yeah, of course, hypothetical.
then now he cannot like do anything from up there if I got arrested, like butterfly effect, like so
Absolutely.
icky, it's so icky, but like that's my perspective, and that's it.
It silences like a lot of people on the inside, I guess, who recognize the faults of the government. If they wanted that change, they're basically locked in a position where they can't say anything.
Exactly. Yeah, but that's it from me, I think. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining in for the interview too. It was really nice to be able to talk to you about this, especially from like a different perspective on everything.
Thank you for listening. This is really
Absolutely.
you're doing right now.
I just wanted to say like a really quick thank you to Angelin too.
Oh,
Yeah,
wow.
thank you so much for doing this. Applaud your bravery and see you soon, hopefully.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
appreciate your generosity. Each year, for a week, we host Fund Drive, our annual fundraising campaign that augments our budget and supports our operations. It is thanks to you that we can rise higher and reach further.
Yes, thank you for donating to Fund Drive 2025. I'm Jesse, this is Speak Up. Thanks also to Flo for that interview about protests in Indonesia. Important stuff. And happy to have Florentina on board producing interviews and participating in the department. We're going to take a quick musical break and then we'll be back with more talk. This is new music from Kokoroko. It's called My Father in Heaven.
When I look into your eyes, all my pain and sadness dies. Even when I sleep at night, there you are in my dreams with a tear.
Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University. I'm Jesse. You just heard My Father in Heaven by Kokoroko. And before that we heard an interview from new volunteer Flo, and now we're going to hear another interview from a new volunteer. Well, not so much an interview, but a bit of a review and a preview and a little bit of talk about an upcoming play. This is Katie, who now hosts the Friday noon open mic. And she attended a play and a preview of a play and was excited to share that with us. So let's get into it.
Hey, this is Katie from the open mic on Fridays at 12, here to tell you about a play I went to that is going on right now called The Best Restaurant in the World Ever. It's this really endearing story about all these people who work in a restaurant and they're all hilariously used to their chef's wacky and somewhat concerning tendencies. Meanwhile, they all have their own personal juicy drama going on. This show was filled with suspenseful questions like, how's this love triangle going to end? And what's the apocalypse going to look like? And most importantly to me, what is going on with Rhea's couch? It is a really refreshing combination of silliness and reality that makes you genuinely connect to all the characters on their own individual journeys that come together. While I was there, I also got to talk to a recent SFU graduate, Lachlan Harris-Faisal, who played Bruno. We chatted about his transition out of university, his favorite moments from the play, and his current work for his studio in East Van, The Wormhole. The best restaurant in the world ever is playing at Jericho Arts Center until November 16th. Here's the interview. So when did you graduate SFU?
I graduated like literally a month ago.
Yeah, so how has that transition been going from like doing plays with SFU to doing a play like by yourself kind of?
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been weird. I mean, I feel like at SFU, like the SCA promotes such a like do-it-yourself type vibe where a lot of it is like, okay, this is performance creation, you're gonna make your own show, and you know, we work a lot with devising and kind of like more contemporary techniques like that. And so going into the professional world outside of school and doing a show that is not using those techniques has been, it's been really refreshing. It's been fun to be like, okay, great, I have this fantastic toolbox that the SCA gave me, and now I'm going out and I get to use it in not a space where I'm creating, but in a space where I'm taking someone else's source material and I'm, you know, putting that on in their play, but still getting to like live within that as like the character allows, which is, it's been fun. It's been great. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything that you learned from SFU that you like specifically applied to this performance?
Let me think. I feel like I learned definitely, I didn't use as much like of the creation techniques of like, okay, this is how you make a show, because obviously the show's already made, but definitely I took a lot of the techniques that I learned in like my voice and movement courses, you know, like, I feel like always for any show, you know, I'm gonna warm up properly, I'm gonna like get into my body, right, I'm gonna you know, utilize my voice in a way that is, you know, good for what I want to do for the character. So definitely I use a lot of those techniques that SFU taught of just like how to be an actor, right? So a lot of that great stuff.
Yeah, I also saw that you did dance with SFU.
I did, yeah.
So I was wondering, like, do you feel like the skill of dancing connects with the skill of acting, and they kind of influence each other?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, not a lot of people think this, but I do feel like, you know, in a way, like, dance is theater, right? I think that, and vice versa as well. I feel like it's all performance at the end of the day, and it was so cool to be in the dance rep show last year. You know, I mean, I'm really grateful to Rob Kitsos for that. He's such a fantastic choreographer and professor. And being brought into that show was really, it was very eye-opening for me because I hadn't really done a lot of dance before that. And so I was like, okay, this is a whole new performance technique. And that actually has brought a ton of, it's brought a lot more perspective into my acting and my theater creation skills and repertoire since, because I'm like, okay, how am I going to, you know, this is great, like how am I going to do this show, right? You think about it vocally, you think about it character wise but I think also what a lot of actors forget to do is a lot of people think about how they're moving, right? But I feel like there is a certain way that dancers think about how they're moving that actors don't. And so it's very interesting to bring that way of thinking into a theatrical space, you know?
Yeah, totally. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I noticed, like, in this play, everyone was really good at being really over the top with the physical comedy.
Yeah.
Was that something that just happened naturally with you guys, or was that your director influencing that?
So she definitely told us to go over the top.
Like, yeah.
Our director, Karen, who's great. I love her very much. One of her big notes was like, I want you to go so far that I need to tell you to pull it back, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's such a great place to live in, and she gave us so much room to be in that. It was really nice to just have kind of like the leash taken off, right? And just like, okay, go, do whatever you want, you know? That's clearly apparent, and that a lot of people are very big, you know?
Was there ever a moment where she had to tell you to pull back, that you guys were doing too much?
Yes. Yeah. No.
Really?
I'm trying to think of of when that was. I remember that there definitely were some times she was like, okay, too far. She definitely said it to Jordan, who plays Max, at one point. Because there was some definitely times where he's very much going over the top with his character. So he definitely got that note before. I think me and Kenneth, who played Aldo, might have gotten that note. I think maybe like once when we did the first scene where we're talking to Teresa about how you know, we believe that we're cheating on the other, right, and everything, and we're kind of not really clued into what's actually going on. And definitely there was a lot of like very there's a lot of overacting going on, a lot of Al Pacino type lines being thrown out, which was a lot of fun. But it's good to play in that, and then it's great when you have to pull back. So yeah.
Wait, so do you have any favorite scenes from the play, like as a whole?
Yes. No. I mean, oh god, I'm trying to think of. I love the ending scene is very funny, like Rando's whole thing. I mean, I love the scenes I'm in. Not to be that guy,
yeah.
But you know,
no, me too.
I really like. The scene where we both realize after Rhea leaves and goes to make us a coffee, where we have our little back and forth of like, what do you bring this up for? No, what do you mean? I love you too. But another, like that kind of, we have such a we built such a good chemistry in that scene. It was so fun to be in that. And yeah, I feel like that one of my favorites, I'd say.
Yeah, totally. Okay, well, so what's next for you? For, like, are you auditioning, or...?
Yeah, there's some stuff in the works, hopefully. But currently, right now, I'm hopefully going to... waiting on to hear back from the Revolver Festival in June. I sent in an application with my my friend and collaborator, Katie Garasim, who's also a graduate of SFU. So, fingers crossed on that. We'll see how that happens. But if... Even if we don't get in, we're hopefully going to be producing the show sometime next year, potentially. I'm working out of a new studio space that me and a couple of other friends and collaborators have rented. We've got a studio space out in East Van called The Wormhole. We do monthly, like, 5-minute performance nights. We do, like, movie nights and stuff where it's just open for anyone to come in. And we show local art in amongst our circles. But, you know, people can come in and watch and have a good time. So that's kind of what I'm working on at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's amazing. Thanks for talking to us about that. People can come check out The Wormhole.
Yeah, they can. We're on Instagram at Through the Wormhole Theater. So check that out. And yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, very cool. Well, so thanks so much for doing this interview with me. That's great. Is there anything else you want to say before we leave?
Come see the best restaurant in the world ever. We are open until November 16th. So yeah.
True that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Bird Note. A massive bird soars along the New England coastline, above nesting islands and cliffs inhabited by puffins and other seabirds. This bird's broad black wings measure more than 5 feet across, in bold contrast with its white head and tail. Its beak is long and thick. A bald eagle might come to mind, but this is no eagle. It's a great black-backed gull, the world's largest gull. Great black-backed gulls can be found on both sides of the North Atlantic, and their diet, like that of other large gulls, includes fish, squid, and winter visits to landfills. But it's their reputation as serious predators of other birds that really sets this huge gull apart. During the nesting season, great black-backed gulls prey on eggs and nestlings of other seabirds. They'll also hunt adult seabirds like puffins and grebes, and songbirds as big as a grackle. Just over a century ago, these birds were nearly wiped out by feather hunters and egg collectors. And though their populations recovered with help from environmental protections, great black-backed gulls are in decline once again. And scientists are still trying to figure out why. What we can say for certain is that this majestic gull that soars like an eagle is a marvel worth fighting for. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. Thanks to Katie for that review interview about the best restaurant in the world. Check it out. You can also check out Katie's show on Friday at noon, where she'll be talking about that in more depth, giving a real live off-the-cuff chat about the play. So check that out. Noon tomorrow. Okay, we're right into the last 8 minutes of this program, so that leaves us with time for music, I think. And so we're going to hear from Ace and Abi from their new record, Edge of the Earth. This is Into the Fire. Thanks for hanging out with me this hour. Democracy Now! Is up next, and I'll see you next time. Bye.
Put it in the fire, 'cause nothing is forever. You put your life in order of things you cannot measure. So put it in the fire, or you're gonna get burned. The things that you admire come of lessons learned. Do you believe in fate? Just leave it to the stars. Or do you make your choices and prove it with the scars? eventually go. Eventually go. And I keep on asking for time to stop pacing. It rushes and flows past me. It's healing, it's gone, no endeavor less long. Just lingers on endlessly.
Big old